Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, I'm Bella Torbett, brand executive at DKI Witness.
And I'm Rachel Laidler, project editor at DKI Witness.
And welcome to Where to Go, where every fortnight we find out more about the world's favourite travel destinations with the people who know those places best. Welcome to season 7, Rachel. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm very excited to be here. It's going to be fun.
I know this is our first time hosting together, so excited. Yeah. Today we're off to the Swedish capital of Stockholm. Rachel, have you been before?
I have been, but it was on a bit of a whistle-stop tour up to Uppsala to see a friend who was at uni there. So I'd definitely like to go back and explore the city a bit more. But from what I remember, it was just absolutely beautiful. And yeah, the fact that it's made up of all of those different islands as well, I just think that's so unique. Mm. So yeah, definitely would like to go back. How about you? Have you been?
Yeah, I went a couple of years ago and totally agree. I think it was really beautiful. I had a lovely time. I always think about, I went to this sort of vegan buffet called De Herman, I think it was called, and the food was amazing, and it was on the river. It had beautiful views. Even if you're not, you know, vegan or vegetarian, it's really great, and you just pay, you know, a certain amount and then you can eat as much as you want. So I'd recommend it for anyone. Really great.
Sounds like my sort of place. I love food. Mm. So who have we got on today?
Today, our Stockholm expert is Malcolm Jack. Malcolm Jack is a freelance journalist, copywriter, author, and editor. Malcolm has contributed to some of the world's leading media brands, including Time Magazine, National Geographic, The New York Times, The Guardian, and us here at DKI Witness. Welcome, Malcolm.
Hey, hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So as usual, we'll start by learning a little bit more about our guest, Malcolm, followed by his all-important recommendations of where to go and insider knowledge of Stockholm. And then we'll hear about how to plan the best possible visit.
Malcolm, you're originally from Scotland. How did you end up living in Stockholm?
So it's a long and complex and ultimately not very exciting story, but my wife is Swedish, is the simple answer.
Right.
But we met in Scotland.
It was for love.
Yes, I moved here for love. Moved here several times for love. So we met in Scotland, where I'm from originally, about almost 20 years ago now. And we've sort of gone back and forth between Sweden and Scotland over the years. So we moved to Stockholm the first time about 12 years ago. We were here just a relatively short time. We moved back to Scotland, started a family, and then moved to Stockholm again about a year ago, this time with two kids. So we're here now for the foreseeable.
Exciting. Lovely. That's amazing. So how did you find the transition between Scotland and Stockholm? Because I live up in the Highlands and there are like certain parts of the culture that, in terms of like the right to roam outside and the countryside and everything. But what was it like, that transition?
I mean, I feel like I've been in constant transition, to Sweden and Swedish society and culture for like about half of my adult life now. You know, I think I fell in love with the place pretty quickly. And, you know, it's been like this ongoing process. It's never, it never feels entirely complete. And I can't honestly remember a time now when Sweden and Swedishness wasn't somehow in me. But I mean, I suppose in terms of just simply of, you know, how much in common do Scottish and Swedish society have? Quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of peculiarities to them both, but, you know, they share many more things in common, I think.
I guess as well, Rachel, you kind of mentioned there with the sort of freedom to roam, the landscapes in a way, they share definitely some sort of commonalities. Would you agree?
I do take that point, although the one thing that I would say that makes me slightly uncomfortable about Sweden, certainly most of Sweden is very flat. And if you are Scottish, you are accustomed to the opposite. So I do miss hills. I do miss a bit more change in the landscape as I move around. But there's something about the sort of never-ending kind of like sort of flatness and almost sort of desolation about parts of Sweden, which is kind of beautiful in its own way.
So the one thing that occurs to me, obviously it's March now, we're coming out of winter, but how do you find the winters in Sweden? Because they're dark, right?
Yeah, there's no getting away from it. Again, I mean, I'm Scottish.
You've trained for this.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I'm certainly trained for a certain type of inclement weather, which is, you know, I've spent a large part of my life living in Glasgow, where it rains like 366 days a year. So, you know, any day when it's not raining feels like a blessing to me, even if it is like pitch black and it's snowing sideways, you know, I'll take it. Another thing I love about Sweden is, okay, so, you know, winter is deep and dark, you know, there's no getting away from that. But Sweden has very nicely defined seasons generally. And, you know, I mean, we're on the roughly the same latitude here as, so like St. Petersburg in Russia, Southern Alaska, United States, Shetland in Scotland. There's no getting away from how deep and dark the winters are. You know, temperatures can get super low, sort of minus 20 and even below. You're talking sometimes in the middle of winter, it can be dark at sort of 3 o'clock kind of time. You can get snow as late as April. But then when spring comes, it really comes. It like explodes. And the whole city suddenly, it's like it comes out of hibernation. And it's a really wonderful feeling. And then summers as well, they can be, the last ones have been a little bit disappointing, but summers could be scorching. You know, you can get some spells of really, really hot weather. And people really like embrace summer with such a passion here. There's a very outdoorsy culture.
I suppose you've got a lot more kind of light in the summer as well, in terms of like, what time does it get dark?
Oh yeah, I mean, you're talking Midsummer Eve, which is like the biggest public holiday, public celebration after Christmas in Sweden. It's like the Swedish summertime Christmas. Yeah, I mean, it's not unusual there, especially depending how far north you are. But I mean, it doesn't get dark at all. I mean, it's light like all night long. And that's a big, I mean, midsummer is a big party occasion. So, you know, it's not like it keeps you awake.
You're going to be up anyway.
Yeah.
You're awake anyway. Yeah, right.
That's definitely something I've always wanted to experience. Like, I've been to Stockholm, but in, I think, around autumn, I'd love to go in the summer and experience that. So before we jump into the best things to do, Malcolm, tell us your absolute favourite thing about Stockholm.
I mean, it changes. I mean, it's changed a lot, I suppose, thinking about it relative to different phases of my life I've spent here. And I suppose if I'm going to give you a current answer, I mean, I'd probably say two things. I mean, it's such a wonderful city in which to raise kids and be a parent and to also visit with children as well, I would say. Mm. There's that, you know, that old proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. I feel like much more that here in Stockholm than I ever did in the UK. And it can be simple things like free public transport for kids up to the age of 11. And, you know, doors and pathways and things are designed for prams and strollers and also for elderly people and things like that. But more generally, there's just a sense of like the urban realm has a sense of sort of fun and adventure about it. It's like almost like it's been shaped from a child's eye view in places. And so one thing I really enjoy is that there are public sculptures and artworks all over the place, which are, you know, to aesthetically elevate, you know, the public realm from an adult perspective. But looking at them more closely, when I see how my children interact with them, I realize they've also been designed with children in mind, because they're designed to be climbed on and jumped from and messed with, and they're you know, robust, and it's just a nice touch I enjoy. And there's things like free paddling pools and beaches, and, you know, in summer you go outside and you swim and you go to the forest and you pick berries and it's all disgustingly wholesome, things like that.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, sounds very whimsical.
And I'd say another thing as well, sort of on that note, which I love about Stockholm is its proximity to greenery and to water. You know, it's like a lot of great European cities, it's built on water. But, you know, there's something I think kind of unique about Stockholm insofar is it's built on a series of islands. It's basically the stupidest place to build a city. You know? It's like, and it's, you know, hence the reason why, you know, the islands are very densely populated, because they basically run out of space to build on some of them. But water sort of is part of your everyday experience. It flows around, you know, the islands, and you're always sort of crossing it and traversing it and looking at it, and it creates space in what is a very densely built up city. And it's also a great way to travel. You spend a lot of time on boats here. You know, ferries are part of the public transport network and things. And then also the water quality itself is generally okay in a lot of places, and which means you can swim many places right in the heart of the city in summertime, which I think is something quite unusual and quite surprising to visitors about Stockholm. Yeah,
that sounds wonderful.
They do say as well, don't they, that proximity to water is supposed to make you happier, so maybe we've solved it. That's why Sweden's so happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny when you look at a property, when you go to buy property in Sweden, if you look at property listings, every one of them will mention proximity to water, the distance to water, and that will affect the price of property. It's a bit mundane, but it's very much an acknowledged part of how it sort of elevates your experience of the city, is being able to see and be close to water. And I'm lucky, I'm looking out my window and I can see it now. So,
all right. Well, I think that's a really nice introduction to Stockholm. So we'll move on now to the best things to do.
To kick things off, we're going to ask you to give us a quick fire tour of Stockholm. We're going to name a couple of categories and then you need to suggest just one thing to do. I realise that's really difficult, but just one thing. So are you ready to go?
I am ready.
Cool. So what is your favourite view in Stockholm?
I'm going to cheat a bit and I'm going to say a sort of a smorgasbord of views.
Oh, okay, very on theme, we'll allow it.
So as I say, I live on Södermalm, the big sort of south central island. And it slopes upwards quite sharply towards its sort of northern edge. And there's a lot of cliffs and sort of high vantage points that look northwards out over the centre of the city at the sort of top edge of Södermalm. So for a good sort of like 3 or 4 kilometres from Marieberget in the west, where you're looking out over Lake Mälaren towards the city hall. And then you can go all the way along to Fofangen in the east. And from there, you're sort of looking back into the city across the Gamla Stan and then Gröna Lund, the amusement park. And then you can see all the way up the archipelago as well. So you can sort of work your way along the sort of northern sort of fringe of Södermalm over the space of a couple of hours. And you get all these bird's eye views of central Stockholm. And you know, you just sort of follow your feet through the neighborhoods around there, and they can suddenly just sort of out of nowhere apart in between two buildings, and you're presented with this incredible sort of like panoramic view of Stockholm. And you can be the only person there. These are not really like particularly, you know, noted kind of viewpoints. You know, it's not unusual if you walk along that sort of route to suddenly be sitting like with a bench all to yourself, taking in a view of like the whole of the center of the city. So I try and make it my mission at least once a day to try and get a sea view into my day if I can, because it's just the ultimate sort of head clearer. And that's kind of where I sort of gravitate towards.
It sounds as though you're getting a real mixture as well of different kind of viewpoints.
Yeah. You feel sort of spoiled. It's sort of like, I can't kind of believe it sometimes. It's sort of like, you know, you kind of get it all in one view. It's like one of those cheesy, you know, if you go to like one of those street artists who does those cheesy drawings where they cram all artificially cram all the tourist attractions of a city into one picture. It feels sometimes like you're standing at the bar and you're like, yep, that's Stockholm. There it is. Yeah. You know, it's all there.
Lovely. Okay. Speaking of smorgasbord, what's your favourite thing to eat?
Sweden's not exactly, I'll acknowledge, famous for its cuisine, you know, unless you're counting IKEA meatballs.
Delicious.
Don't knock them until you've tried them. I do enjoy native Swedish food in general, including meatballs, because you can get good meatballs, not just the IKEA ones. But I'm going to pick something nice and trashy, which I think, if memory serves, was actually the first thing I ever ate on my first ever visit to Sweden. So it sort of makes me a little bit nostalgic when I have one. And it's called a tumbrorulla. And it's sort of like the sort of thing you eat late at night from like a hot dog stand, of which there's millions in Stockholm, a very sausage-based culture here. And so, you know, it's a sort of like late night kind of slightly drunken kind of indulgence. And it's basically like it's a huge thin bread conical wrap, is the best I can describe it. And it's filled with mashed potatoes. Ooh. And then what, you usually get the choice of one or two hot dog sausages. You can have them grilled or cooked. And they sort of stick out of the wrap. They're sort of shoved into the mashed potato. And then usually it's dressed with like pickled cucumber mayonnaise, a creamy sort of shrimp salad, dried onions, and then loads of ketchup and mustard.
Oh, wow.
And you eat it with a little fork. It's got a serrated edge on it for cutting the sausages. Very clever. You always start with the little fork, but then inevitably you just end up eating it with your hands. You make an absolute like filthy mess of yourself in the process. That's all part of the fun. It's definitely not date food, but it's very satisfying.
That sounds so good.
It wasn't what I was expecting, but it sounds great. Yeah.
Any kind of place that puts potato in, because I'm originally from the Northeast and chip butties and things like that. So, you know, respect. Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, automatic.
I don't know how somebody invented it. Some guy must have been drunk as hell when he came up with that crazy contrivance, but it works.
That sounds brilliant. I'm so hungry now. So to go alongside what you're going to eat, what is your favourite thing to drink? Because we know that Swedish folk are quite interested in coffee. They love a cup of coffee, but what about for you?
Well, you beat me to it. I have to acknowledge, it would be wrong of me not to acknowledge akvavit, you know, schnapps, which is probably Sweden's most famous alcoholic beverage. And it's definitely something I like to drink a lot of on certain occasions, but it's not the sort of thing you consume casually or even very often. It's kind of like a sort of a big occasion, kind of like something you would drink with like a big meal, like at midsummer or Christmas or like family occasions or something like that. And you all sit and sing stupid songs. There's like there's a whole canon of they're called schnapsvisa. There's silly little songs that everybody sings before they knock back their schnapps. But anyway, I'm not going to say schnapps. I'm actually going to say coffee. You did beat me to this, but Swedes are mad about coffee. They're one of the biggest consumers of coffee per capita in the world. They are addicted to the caffeine. I mean, it's interesting to me on one level because, so Sweden, I think it's quite well known that Sweden has quite strict controls on alcohol off sales. Mm-hmm. So you can only buy alcohol from basically one shop or one big chain of shops, which is the state off license, Systembolaget. And it's only open very set days at very strict times and blah, blah, blah. Whereas coffee, on the other hand, you can get coffee anywhere, anytime. You are never far from coffee. Every single like little corner store will have a pretty elaborate coffee machine going like 24/7. You get it, you know, obviously cafes, you get it even in shops. If you go into a shop and I went to a bag store before to buy a new rucksack before Christmas. And before I even got into it with the guy about what I wanted, he was like, do you want a coffee? He went and made me a very strong coffee, you know, things like that. It's just crazy.
Sounds like my sort of place.
Yeah, right. So a lot of it is quite basic. Some of it can be quite cheap and nasty. They make it quite strong. But generally speaking, I really enjoy how you can get a decent and even a great cup of coffee if you know where to look, no matter where you go in Stockholm, any hour of the day. And there's some really great local Stockholm coffee roasters, which I would recommend. Johan and Nyström, Licke, Kersh, you can look them up. You can buy online from them. You get their beans direct, or there are stores in the city where you can go in and buy or get a cup. And that is probably more than anything else. That is what, that's what I drink. I've definitely been sort of sweetified in that way.
Okay, so let's imagine you've drunk your coffee, you're all fueled up. Your favorite day activity?
I'm going to say quite simply, get on a boat.
Okay.
If in doubt, get on a boat.
Can't go wrong on a boat.
No, right. The thing I love about Stockholm, there's an endless opportunity to get on boats. There's the commuter ferries. So they're part of the integrated public transport system. So that's the same ticket as you use to ride the subway or the bus or the tram. You can also use it to board a number of boats that go around the waterways in the center of the city. And they will take you to all the sort of major islands of the city, Gamlestaden, Djurgården, Skeppsholmen, and so on. But I like to think of them as like a thing to do in themselves as well, as like an activity in its sense, if that makes sense. Because it's just, it's a beautiful way to see the city, especially if the weather's nice, to sort of take a step back, get a bit of distance and space. And just everything's a bit better on a boat. Everything, you know, as long as it's not terrible choppy seas, you know, there's short crossings and they're just a nice way to sort of break up the day. I mean, I sometimes like to just get on the boat just for the sake of getting on the boat, and just go over to the other side and then just come back, just as a way to sort of take a breath of fresh air and clear my head a bit.
I'm really embarrassed because I've been to Stockholm and I didn't go on a boat.
How did you manage that?
I just walked everywhere.
I did the same thing.
I did it. Why? God's sake, we need to go again, Rachel. Go back.
I think the thing about the commuter ferries, I mean, you just wouldn't assume, right, that ferries would be part of the public transport offering. Mm. I think maybe it does surprise people a little bit, but they're right there. And there's even some that are free. There's one that's close to where I live, which links up some neighbourhoods around here. It sails a sort of triangular route. Takes about 20 minutes and you can just get on it for free and you just go around the whole route. I did that this morning just for a breath of fresh air, and the man asked me when I was getting off why had I forgotten to get off, because mostly it's commuters who use it, and he was like, did you forget to get off at the other side or something? No, just for fun.
I'm feeling quite inspired. I might just get on the Uber boat on the Thames in London. Maybe I'll do that.
Just jump on,
pretend I'm in Stockholm.
So you're back on dry land now, sorry to say, but if you had to choose your favourite museum or gallery, and we know there's a lot to choose from in Stockholm, which one would it be?
So I'm not going back on dry land.
Oh!
This is an easy one. I am and I'm not. This is a very easy one to answer. Vasa Museum. So I think it's my favourite museum in the world. It's completely unique insofar as it's an entire museum constructed fundamentally around one artifact, one giant artifact, and that's the Vasa, which was a Swedish warship built in the early 17th century, and it met a very swift and unfortunate and embarrassing end, especially for the king it was named after. It sank in Stockholm Bay about 1,300 metres, about 30 minutes into its maiden voyage. It was just really badly designed. It was top heavy. It got caught by the wind, let water in, and the thing sank and was gone. And so it lay there on the bottom of the bay in Stockholm, really close to the heart of the city, for centuries, until the 1950s, when this enterprising, slightly eccentric amateur archaeologist, Anders Franzén, he had established a pretty strong hunch as to where it was, and he used this little homemade device to search the seabed and eventually pulled up samples of what he was determined was the Vasa, wow, which had been lost for a very long time, and indeed it was, and there was a huge effort to raise it. And there's something I don't entirely understand about the water qualities, the water properties of the Baltic seawater, which meant it was like extraordinarily well preserved. And so much of the ship was largely intact. They restored the rest of it. And then they later built this amazing custom design, sort of vaguely kind of like nautically themed looking building around it to house it on Djurgården. And that's the museum. It's basically just the ship itself, which is enormous. And you have to sort of go up and down several levels to see it all the way from like the keel up to the mast tops. And then there's hundreds of smaller artifacts discovered in and around the wreckage, which you can look at as well. So I just think it's so cool. Like, it blows kids' minds when they see it.
It's funny because that's one of the places that when I went to Stockholm a couple of years ago, I went to, and it blew my mind as well in terms of like how elaborate it was. It was just, it was absolutely breathtaking.
And that rounds off the quickfire round. Thank you so much, Malcolm. You did a great job. I am absolutely dreading my next question because I didn't go to the Vasa Museum either. And I feel like in this next question, you're going to say a bunch of stuff that I also didn't do. And I'm going to be like, what was I doing in Stockholm? Next question. What are some absolute highlights that listeners shouldn't miss?
So the big and obvious one. So I've obviously already mentioned the Vasa, which is, you know, number one must do. But the good thing about Vasa is that it can be combined with a bunch of other stuff, which is all on or around Djurgården, which is like the sort of park island of Stockholm, where there's a lot of the sort of recreation and entertainment offering is kind of concentrated around there. So you can knock loads of stuff off. You could spend 2 or 3 days really around that area and still not manage to do everything. But in that vicinity, so you can do like a museum combo, you know, Vasa, and then Nordiska Museum is right across the way. That's like Sweden's Cultural History Museum, Historiska, which is Swedish history, good fun if you're into Vikings and stuff. And then across the water on Skeppsholmen, take one of those ferries I was telling you about. And across the water to Skeppsholmen, you've got Moderna Museet, which is the contemporary art museum. Stockholm has got loads and loads of great museums. That's just a few. There's many, many smaller ones. So you can basically spend days just on museums. And then another museum for something completely different, just along from Vasa, you've got the ABBA Museum.
I knew this was coming.
Which is great fun, with one important caveat: you have to like ABBA. If you don't like ABBA, yeah. Not for you. But I think it's been slightly trumped by the whole ABBA Voyage experience in London. So this is not exactly like AI ABBA concert experience. Don't get the two mixed up. I mean, there are some like interactive fun stuff to do, but nothing like the big, you know, London Megadome experience. But if you want to experience ABBA at source, you know, in their home city where they made all of their iconic music, it's a must do. You could even like work that in with like a whole, you can do like a whole ABBA tour of Stockholm. There's sites all over the city, you know, recording studio and things like that you can go and visit. So if you're an ABBA geek, you can spend a lot of time looking around Stockholm. And then across the way from ABBA, the ABBA Museum, there's Gröna Lund, which is the big Stockholm amusement park. Right on the waterfront, huge roller coasters, which feel like they're going to like throw you into the sea. Great fun, especially with kids. It is, I would warn you, hellishly expensive, but then welcome to Stockholm. And then I suppose another must do, albeit with some sort of caveats, is Gamla Stan, so the old town. Mm. So it's the historic and sort of geographical heart of Stockholm. It's very atmospheric and pretty, sort of narrow, winding, cobbled streets, you know, colorful old buildings, some of them, which this is something that you really appreciate best if you're on the ferry when you're moving away or towards Gamla Stan, you get a good perspective on this. But some of the buildings are like at really precariously wonky angles because of subsidence. It's sort of like Venice or something. And so also on Gamla Stan you'll find Kungliga Slottet, which is the royal palace. So if you like royal things, not for me personally, but if you like royal stuff, there you go. But yeah, I mean, I would say it's a mixed bag at Gamla Stan. I don't generally spend a lot of time there myself because, I mean, it's like all tourist kind of like centres of any city. It's stuff with shops selling like bad touristy Viking hats and stuff like that. And it can be like hellishly busy. And because the streets are really dense and narrow, it can get a little bit claustrophobic. But there are, in and among all of that, there is some genuinely really, really good cafes and restaurants and bars. You know, it doesn't just exist to serve tourists and visitors. Yeah. You know, it is a place that residents of the city do venture into for other reasons.
So you've told us about some of the highlights, but are there any hidden gems that you would recommend as well?
I'll give you two things here which are appropriate to the two sort of seasonal extremes you get here in Stockholm, so summer and winter. And these are not, I wouldn't exactly describe these as hidden gems. One of them in particular, there's things to do that I don't think you would necessarily assume are things you can or would end up doing on a city break, which are things that I really like about them. As I've already touched on, in summer, if it's a warm day, you have to absolutely make like a Stockholmer and head for a beach. Swedes have a fairly loose definition of a beach. If you're imagining, you know, a big expansive lush white sand, you may be a bit disappointed. There are some that are big and sandy, but by beach you're more so, I mean, some of them will just be a rocky kind of outcrop or something like that. But so by beach you're more so talking like a kind of like a designated sort of spot on the waterfront where you can take a swim as the key thing, access to the water. But you know, there'll be space to kind of stretch out and relax and get a bit of sun, maybe have a picnic or something. There might even be, you know, there might be toilet facilities, cafe, ice cream, even a bar or something. And sometimes like there's outdoor showers and things like that. But, you know, and you can go and spend the day, have a picnic. You can even take a few beers, bottle of wine if you're discreet about it. So there are like dozens and dozens of inverted commas beaches all over the city. And everyone's got their favorite. People will have like their own like little hidden away corner somewhere which others don't know about, that, you know, you can maybe get a little bit more space and privacy and things like that. But there are others that are well-known, marked on maps, places like Longholmen, Tantolunden on Södermalm, Hässelby Strandbad towards the north, Farsta Strandbad in the south, loads, loads more. And they can be easily reached by public transport. So, you know, very accessible. And they're just a nice way, there's just something enjoyably kind of contrary about the idea of being in the heart of a big city. but, you know, spending time by the water on a inverted commas beach. I would caution that they can be packed on a really hot day, particularly at weekends. They can be packed. That goes for a lot of things in Stockholm. And I would say as well, a personal favorite of mine, Hellasgården. So it's the Nacka Nature Reserve, a little bit outside Stockholm to the sort of southeast, but easily reachable by bus. So a lovely swimming spot, nice lake, but there are saunas there as well.
Wonderful.
And that's like my favorite thing to do in the world. That's the greatest gift Sweden ever gave me besides my family. is discovering saunas. And so to take a scorching hot sauna and then jump in a nice cold lake is just dreamy. And the sauna at Hellas is open year round, so you can even do it in winter and you can Amazing. Plunge into the frozen lake, which is highly recommended if you are brave / stupid enough to try it. It's like extreme purification for body, mind and soul.
I've heard they call it refreshing.
That is a word for it, yeah. leading me neatly onto my sort of my winter, that wasn't my winter recommendation, that is a winter recommendation, but my other winter sort of hidden gem. So you can't exactly call a great big hill a hidden gem, I will acknowledge. But so on the southern side of Stockholm, very close to the centre, you can ski very close to the heart of the city in wintertime. There's a mostly artificial hill, it's called Hammarby Backen. And so there was a natural hill, was quite a bit smaller, and it's been built up gradually since the 60s. They've used earth excavated from various developments around the city. So there's a big entertainment arena called Globe. The Globe, it was called the Globe Arena originally, now it's called the Avicii Arena. And it's like the big events arena where you go and watch big concerts and things. So interestingly, they dug all the foundation out of that and drove it up to the top of Hammarby Backen and used it to grow the mountain. And they've cleared it from creating other neighbourhoods in that area and things. So it's now about 94 metres above sea level, which is a decent size. They've got artificial snow cannons, so it's got snow all winter, even when there's a thaw. And there's ski lifts. You can loan or you can hire equipment if you arrange it in advance. And yeah, you can ski right in the heart of the city. And also, if you get right to the top, you get amazing views sort of northwards over the city, which, you know, like winter nights, with the whole lights of the city sparkling, you know, and you're at the top of that strange artificial hill and skis. It's just it's just a sort of odd, surprising thing. And I just always recommend it because, you know, if you're an active kind of person, I just think that can be a fun and unusual way to sort of work a sort of, a ski adventure into a sort of wintertime city break.
Sounds lovely. It shows the importance of the great outdoors as well to folk in Sweden too. It seems to be a big part of the lifestyle over there.
They will literally move heaven and earth to have outdoor experiences, yeah.
Nice.
That actually leads me quite nicely on to the final question in this round. So if listeners want to explore a bit beyond the city, what sort of day trips can they reasonably fit into a trip?
Can you guess what I might suggest this involves as a mode of transport?
Is it going to be water related?
Never the water.
It's boats again. Get on a boat. The archipelago, the Stockholm archipelago, which is this. Mm-hmm. So that sort of stretches out eastwards immediately from the centre of the city outwards all the way to the Baltic Sea. And it's this like endless expanse of islands and waterways. It's like about 30,000 little islands and islets, wow. I think, all together. And you can just spend literally endless amounts of time out there exploring it. But there is a bunch of sort of main kind of islands and mainland destinations which you can visit in and among it, mainly sort of summertime trips. But Fjaderholmena, Grinda, Värmdö, Vaxholm. And these are, you know, there's lots of places which are maybe just like a day trip experience. Some are overnight experiences. You know, some have got nice beaches and barbecue spots. Some have got cafes. Some have even got really nice like fine dining restaurants. Some have got hotels, spas. You can camp on some of them. Yeah, it's great. You can get to many of these by ferries, which sail right from the heart of the city centre. So right in the kind of downtown centre of Stockholm, you can get on a boat. There are various operators. There's a big one called Vaxholmsbolaget, and they do regular daily sailings. I mean, there's a lot of people live on these islands and commute to work, you know, from the islands using the ferries. And so some of the sailings you have to pre-book, but some you can just walk up and, you know, hop on, hop off, and you can skip between the islands if you plan it out. And it's like this endless sort of summertime playground that kind of stretches out eastward from Stockholm. And something that I kind of enjoy besides the above about it, just a personal fascination of mine, is house spotting. So, you know, there's like thousands of Swedes, and you know, principally Stockholmers, have got cottages, you know, usually just sort of summer cottages. You know, a lot of them are really quite basic, modest things that have been sort of passed down through generations. But there's others that are like owned by like super rich Swedes, which are like pimped to the max. They look like Bond villain houses or something, you know. and I just love seeing that. I mean, this, you know, most of them are, you know, the very traditional. If you picture a traditional Swedish house in your mind, that kind of like sort of reddish color or yellow color timber houses, that's the majority of them. But I'd love the obsession. I'm fascinated by this obsession that Swedes have with building homes on ridiculously sort of impractical land masses, particularly islands. So I just love going past these houses built on like stilts on the side of a cliff or something and pondering how the hell they got all the materials and the manpower across the sea to build the thing. There's just something like at once really impressive and totally absurd about this obsession that Swedes have with living on tiny little islands.
I love it. They've got gumption. They probably see a lovely view and they're like, nah, putting a house up there, it's great. Why not?
That's it.
Amazing. Thank you so much. There was so much in there, so many recommendations. So that concludes Best Things to Do.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bursting with old world charm, modern architecture, superlative restaurants and natural beauty, Stockholm offers something for everyone. Make the most of your trip to this ever-evolving city with Top 10 Stockholm. So, when in your opinion is the best time to visit Stockholm?
So I'll just start by saying in defense of winter, because I'm not going to say winter, but I will say in defense of winter. It is honestly a lovely time to come, in spite of the cold and the snow, and sometimes because of the, you know, the snow is beautiful when it's fresh, not when it's been lying for days and it's all slushy. But anyway,
yeah.
It's a very kind of cozy. The Swedes have got a good word for mysigt. It's a very mysigt time of year. It means basically cozy, and I enjoy the sort of Swedish obsession with lighting up the darkness, principally with candles and candlelight in winter. Swedes are not content in winter unless they've lit at least 47 candles in their home. And that same goes
Sounds
for like
great.
Cafes, bars and restaurants and things. It's very atmospheric, lights in the windows and things like that. But yeah, I'm going to have to say summer for all the reasons I've already sort of stated, you know, the way it kind of explodes with life, with greenery. And there's this wonderful sort of outdoor pavement dining culture. And because the winters are so dark and extreme here, people go to extremes in summer and want to really wring every last drop out of summer when they have the chance. It's, you know, it's like it's their right, you know, to have a bit of sun. Another reason though is there's this interesting sort of contradiction about summer in Stockholm, which I quite like, which is, so if you come in sort of late June, July kind of time, the city can be actually surprisingly relatively quiet because Swedes generally get very good summertime holiday allowance. So Swedes will typically take like 3, 4, even 5 consecutive weeks off work in summer.
Nice.
And then all round that sort of time of year, because it, you know, obviously school holidays and things like that. And people very often, you know, Stockholmers particularly, because it's a very, you know, densely built up city, they very often like to take that time to get out of the city. So they'll either just go abroad on, you know, foreign holidays and things, or they go to what's called their landställe, is it? Well, if they're lucky enough to have one, which is that, would be like a little summer cottage. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier about the archipelago.
Mm-hmm.
Little summer cottages or other type of holiday home, usually very modest, passed down through the generations. Some don't even have a toilet. Well, not like a water toilet. Like, well, we'll get off toilets. but you know, it's a change of scene and pace, get close to nature, all of that stuff, get out of the city. So the upside of that for visitors to Stockholm in summer means that the city can be that little bit sort of quieter at the height of summer. That is high tourist season, of course, so you know you're gonna still see a lot of tourists and things, but that in terms of the natives, that there might be less of them in the city around that time. The only downside of that is that some businesses will just shut down completely. It will just be a sign in the window saying, we're off for a few weeks, see you in August.
On holiday, yeah.
But yeah. I mean, that'll mainly be sort of smaller independent type businesses, shops and things like that. So, you know, not the bigger places which would serve visitors, you know, and or places that sort of thrive on summertime trade. But it is worth being aware of just to avoid disappointment. You know, don't take it personally if there's just a sign in the window saying, see you later.
Yeah, no, that's good to know. I mean, we've talked about sort of midsummer celebrations. We also talked about Christmas being a big deal. Are there any other particular events to sort of mark in the calendar?
So I personally love going to see live music. I mean, I've done a lot of music journalism throughout my career, and I still like to try and get out to gigs as much as I can. And again, in the sort of general Swedish spirit of getting outdoors in summer, there's like this amazing wealth of open air concerts and festivals and things across the city throughout the summer. So I'm mainly interested in the sort of, you know, rock and pop end of the spectrum, but you should find something to cater for just about every taste. So jazz, classical, folk, Schlager, you name it, you're going to find it. There's a festival that takes place on Djurgården in June, a lovely part of Djurgården called Rosendal's Trägård, a festival called Rosendal Garden Party. I went to it last year, it's really enjoyable. In June as well, there's a series of really big outdoor gigs by Swedish and international bands called Stockholm Fields in a big park called Yardet. And then there's also lots of smaller things. Like there's a really nice venue in Södermalm called Mossebacke Terrassen, which is like it's basically a sort of beer garden on a clifftop overlooking Stockholm Bay. And they always have a series of open air summer concerts. Usually it's like late in the season, so August, September sort of time. And that's often skewed more so towards Swedish artists, but that can be a really nice thing to look at if you want to try and discover some Swedish music, of which there is tons and tons. So, you know, you'll find all kinds of other things too if you have a good search online, sometimes free, you know, or very cheap local things, parks, public amphitheaters, that kind of thing. Just check the listings before you come.
Lovely. It sounds like, summer really is the time when it's all going on.
Yeah, it sounds very alive and vibrant. It sounds gorgeous. What was the last type of the genre of music that you snuck in there?
Schlager.
Is that a particular... I'm assuming it's Swedish?
I think it's more synonymous with Germany, Schlager. It's a sort of European sort of, kind of swinging, kind of traditional folk song. I mean, so ABBA, in part, have a very sort of Schlagery kind of influence to their songs, which is something that makes their music quite unique. I mean, it's very kind of, think Eurovision, let's say that.
Okay, I've got the vibe now. That sounds brilliant. So our last question for you is, when travellers are in Stockholm, how can they make a positive impact there?
I think visitors should think very hard about their carbon footprint when they're here. Mm-hmm. And a key way to do that is, I mean, you're going to find it very easy to move about the city in ways that are quite climate conscious. I mean, definitely don't bother hiring a car. The city is really going hard on clamping down on car use, especially centrally. So Stockholm's actually announced plans to become the first big capital city in the world to completely ban petrol and diesel cars from the centre.
Oh, wow.
From next year, from 2025, about 20 blocks. So all of Gamla Stan, and they're talking about gradually expanding that area over time to more of the city. So cars are on the way out here, at least, you know, petrol diesel cars are on the way out here. So the public transport system, I've talked about a lot. I know it sounds really boring, but it's really excellent. It's really inexpensive. It's one ticket for everything: underground train, the Tunnelbana, buses, trams, boats. There's boats again. And it's great. You just like in London, you can just tap your bank card before you board. Charges you a single journey, valid for 75 minutes. That'll get you anywhere you need to go in the city, just about.
Brilliant.
And then even better, if the weather's fair and if you're feeling energetic, cycle. You can hire bikes all over the place, right on the street. There are e-bikes. There's obviously all the scooters and things like that, the e-scooters, lots of different operators, you know, you can access just by app. And there's good cycleways across most of the city. It's not quite up on par with Copenhagen, which is, you know, cycling paradise. But they're working on it. They're growing the network all the time. So there's good cycleways across most of the city, most of the major routes. It's a very cycle-friendly, cycle-tolerant city. Yeah, just mind out rush hour and things like that. And particularly in summers, loads and loads of people commute by bicycle, and you don't want to get in the commuter's way because they can be really grumpy about it. But generally speaking, really, really easy to successfully get around on two wheels across Stockholm. You can even take your bikes on some of the boats.
Brilliant. Got in a last mention there.
Yeah. Well, it's not even my last. No, it is my last. Yeah, and it's nice. It's just that cycling is a great way. You can stop and take stuff in a way that even by public transport, you know, or by car is a bit more challenging. So it's just a great way to see the city.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to cycle in London quite a bit, and I feel like I got a much better feel for it than I would have done by going on the tube, even though the tube is like fantastic. So yeah, that's a really good recommendation. Thank you.
Lovely. Great tips. Thanks so much, Malcolm. That concludes the episode and our foray through Stockholm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Malcolm. I'm feeling very inspired to go take a boat trip. So I think after this, I might go hop down the Thames or something.
I agree. I mean, honestly, it sounded just so amazing. And so many like museums in the city to visit as well, which I love. So yeah, they're definitely going on my bucket list.
Listener, you can get more inspiration from Malcolm at mbjack.com.
And our next episode coming up is Glasgow, which I'll be hosting with Alex. I'm really super excited about that. So listener, we'll see you then.
This podcast was produced by Julia Baker and me, Bella Talbot. For more information about DKR Witness, visit dk.com/travel and follow us on social media at DKR Witness. Please rate, review and follow the show. Your support means so much to us.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.